a meta discussion around how to effectively build software, not like the nitty gritty of how you do this or that, but in the code, but how do you as an organization move forward? So it's not a good idea to make decisions without involving the community. The blowback is huge.
This episode is sponsored by LinearB. Accelerate your development pipeline with data-driven engineering metrics, continuous improvement automation, and project visibility while cutting your software development cycle time in half. Sign up for your free demo at linearb.io and mention the DevInterrupted podcast discount for 1 month free when you sign up for an annual pro membership.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to DevInterrupted. I'm your host, Dan Lyons, and today I'm joined by Kellett Atkinson, Director of Product for DZone. We're honored to have DZone as one of our two premier partners for our upcoming engineering leadership conference, Interact, on September 30th. Find out more at devinterrupted.com/interact. Kellett, thanks so much for joining the pod today.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, totally stoked to have you here. I want to start by giving the audience a chance to get to know you a little bit more.
Yep.
Can you introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a bit about your career journey?
Sure. So I am the director of product at DZone.com, and my purview is really content and community. So DZone.com is a community-led website where we publish content for professional software developers. We help writers who write about the topic to publish and get in front of an audience. And so a big part of what I do today is focused on helping those writers and the people in our community get their experience out into the world and connect with audiences. How I got here, really, I've spent most of my professional career working at DZone. I started at DZone almost a decade ago now. And when I started, I don't think I knew anything about software development. Over the last decade or so of working in a number of capacities at DZone, I've gotten to be exposed to every facet of software development, from the programmers to people who are managing teams to big companies to small startups. I've had exposure to all those and seen what they're doing in the space. And over that time, it's really stoked a passion for me in the space. And I've always loved building stuff. Before I was at DZone, I spent running my own company where I was building analog guitar pedals, actually. Awesome. Building stuff has always been like my big passion, and software just ties in nicely with that.
How did you get the idea to start doing the guitar pedals? That's amazing. Very entrepreneurial of you.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's one of those things where like it was a hobby at first, and I realized that it could make me some money too. And I just loved doing it. I play guitar, and I got tired of dropping like $200 or $300 on guitar pedals. So I said, I'm going to go just start building my own. And I started doing that. And then I had friends asking me like, hey, man, that thing sounds awesome. Can I get one of those? And then I, you know, build one for them. And then over time, I was building like probably a few hundred a year and selling them. And it's one of those things, though, where when you take a hobby and then you turn it into a job, it sucks all the fun out of it.
Yeah, you got to protect your hobbies. I have seen people that work on side projects, or if you have a lot of interesting side projects going, there is some type of correlation to building a career. I found that entrepreneurial spirit. Does that resonate for you? Did you use any of that when you came into DZone? You probably came in as a lower end person and now a director of products.
Yeah, actually, when I joined DZone, this was 2013. The co-founders were still part of the company. Rick Ross, who probably some of your listeners would be familiar with. And we were only a 12-person company at that point. And I think I was probably one of the first people they hired that had any experience that wasn't coming straight out of college. And yeah, I think the reason I joined DZone is because the co-founders were engineers and they loved to build stuff. And so we had that shared passion and that desire to do that. So I think that's what drew us together. But I definitely agree. There's something to be said about the personality type that loves to produce versus consume. And I would imagine you're not unlike that, Dan.
Yeah. I founded LinearB, but prior to LinearB, I had so many small startups that were just like with myself or with my friends, a lot of failures. Probably the weirdest one that I had a company called Hot Route Sports. And this is a company that I had in college. This is, I don't know, early 2000s. And what we were doing there, just random story, what we were doing there is we hooked up a computer server to a cable box, like a TV cable box, and we were streaming sports games to people around the world that usually could not receive that sporting event. We called it Hot Route Sports.
Oh,
I was probably like, Yeah, we did. I did. I've done a lot.
That seems like a $1 billion idea.
Well, it's a $1 billion idea, but it's also probably a little bit illegal as you don't own the content. So it's like I had to evolve. I had to mature my entrepreneurial spirit into something a little bit more legal. But that's just a funny one there. I see that a lot. If you want to grow your career, people that kind of advance, you have these side projects, you have that spirit. It helps you in your day-to-day career journey.
Yeah, I think the thing when I went to grad school, thinking, I just want to figure out how to be a really good entrepreneur. And I think certain people are born with it. Certain people like stumble in, but there is something, and I think it's a personality type that's really prevalent among software engineers and developers because they love to build stuff. So I talk to people all the time who interact with DZone that have some sort of side hustle or side project or have some sort of burgeoning SaaS business that they're doing out in their spare time. I think it's cool to be in an industry and an ecosystem where that kind of entrepreneurial spirit is so prevalent.
Yeah. So if we're getting to DZone, so I've written a bunch of articles on DZone. When I first founded Linear B, it was actually a really great avenue to express my ideas in written form. And I guess a few things there. One is like, how many views are you have like millions of views, right? How many people read on DZone?
Yeah. In a monthly time frame, we get 4 to 5 million unique visitors. And that translates to almost 10 million paid views every month. So lots of people coming to DZone for all sorts of reasons. Thanks to people like you who are writing about some content and publishing it on DZone. And it's really, we focus primarily on more advanced programming topics for professional developers. I wouldn't call us really like a beginner community. There's beginner content, but it's definitely more suited to people who have been in the industry or have a few years experience or going deep dive in these technical concepts or even like high level concepts. Like you often write about managing a dev team or things like that.
I write about what I know. Yeah.
And that's the best kind of content. And I think that that's part of the reason you have a lot of people reading your content.
I do. I was just checking my DZone stats. So I'm at about 600,000 views, which when I first started, when I posted my first article, like I had never written before. So like DZone literally was my avenue to say, okay, I have some really cool ideas. Whether you're starting a company or not, like I have something to give back to the community. I stumbled upon DZone. I started writing a few articles. All of a sudden, thousands of people start viewing. I'm like, oh my God. Then people start hitting me up on LinkedIn. You have a comment section. I actually connected with some of the other engineers in the community, like offline, and said, hey, I really like your article. Could we just chat about it? So I had no idea that was going to happen, and DZone made it possible. So it was like really cool.
That is awesome. I think you came at it with the right approach too, just to write from your firsthand experience and you were looking to share with others. I think that's another thing that really attracts me to software development is the sense of community that I think software developers share, that kind of open source mentality of wanting to share knowledge and, you know, share learnings. And I think DZone, as long as it's been around, has really been about embracing that kind of community spirit of software development.
Right. Yeah. Like my takeaways from it. So if you're a developer or engineering leader listening to this, here's some of the things I learned. One is because before I felt like, I don't know if anyone really wants to hear what I have to say. Wrong. There are a lot. If you are writing about something that you're passionate about, there are millions of other engineers out there that do want to hear what you have to say. There's actually not that many great, I think, avenues to write and post. There are avenues out there, but not that many great ones. And whatever you're going through as an engineer, there's other people going through the same thing and they want to hear about it. That's probably what I learned the most. And the second thing that I learned was actually what's cool about DZone is, at least early on when I was writing, you had a Slack channel going, you all had a few people there that kind of will edit or help get your article out there. So you don't necessarily be like a perfect writer. You have to be knowledgeable. And then there's people at DZone that will get your article out there. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I'd say that's where we really focused our time, my team. And we really think about how can we create an experience for people that want to share their experience to give them the right tools and the right support to be able to get their knowledge out into the world. But the good thing about the audience that we cater to is I think they care less about the form and the format of the content and the writing, and as much as they care about the depth of the content and the subject matter. And whether it's true and useful and something they can relate to, which is cool. I think it lowers the barrier to entry for somebody who wants to share their experience.
Yeah, that's right. If you have something that you're passionate about and you know your stuff, you can get your content out on D-Zone. Like you're not like producing a movie or something. You're trying to just get the good content out there and people will interact with you. So yeah, I encourage everyone in our community, let's start writing. Let's get the ideas out there. D-Zone's a great place to do it.
If you're not writing, at least come read.
You can start.
You can find people like Dan sharing his experience on D-Zone. And there's a lot of people like you out there that are, you know, passionate about what they're doing and they're good at what they do and they have lots of insight to share and they're all publishing on D-Zone. So it's a really good place to come and consume as well as to share your experience.
Now, you got a lot of content there at D-Zone. And I know that you recently published a research report on low code because at D-Zone, you all these different trends that are going on low code. It's been a hot topic in articles. What are the key takeaways from this report that engineers and engineering leaders should be aware of?
So it's interesting because we haven't really published anything like or coalesced anything on low code before. We definitely get people publishing on low code, but it seemed like the appropriate time to take a stab at understanding the state of the space and what people's attitudes were, because low code's been around in some iteration for a long time, whether it's like visual programming or whatever. But I think it's starting to really break through into the mainstream as like people are accepting it as a complementary piece to their software development. In our trend reports, we usually do a survey of our community and we ask about attitudes, best practices, tools they're using, et cetera. And then we publish those results and then we combine that with expert written articles by people who are practicing in the space, whether it's design principles or architecture best practices or whatever. And low code was an interesting one because my perception going in was if we ask developers about low code, they're going to thumb their nose at it and be like, screw low code. It's just hype.
Yeah.
But what we found when we did the research was that not only are a lot of people starting to see how low code development can supplement their software development in meaningful ways, but far more people are actually currently using some form of a low code solution. Now, I think it was like 82 or 83% of our respondents said they're using low code somewhere in their software development lifecycle, which
that's cool.
Was like mind blowing.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say that I've used low code too much when I was developing, but that was like years back. What I was going to say is, do you think hardcore engineers, because I guess my perception was like, oh, like low code, like I'm a hardcore engineer. Like I don't need low code. That's for someone else. Is that
mindset
shifting? Yeah, it's that's for people who don't know how to code. Maybe now it's more like, this is for engineers that you still code a ton in this area over here, but I want to move fast on something else.
Yeah. So when we looked at what are people using low code for, the big kind of applications were interactive forms, enterprise CRUD, integration middleware, request handling, and business process management. So all of those things, I think people are starting to see that it's not about replacing replacing your ability to custom code something, but it's like taking out the tediousness and the like all the low value work that you might do and just making it faster and giving you more space and time to focus on the stuff that actually matters. And I think that actually showed up. That was true.
Yeah. Here's the stuff I don't want to do. Let me spend my brain power on something else. I don't need to code this freaking form. We've had forms since what, like 1980 or whatever.
Probably the same reason why Stack Overflow exists. Like I can go take someone else's
copy paste. Let me copy paste this.
We did break out the results to see are people who are newer to the industry more likely to be using low code. And we found that to be true. So like junior respondents were way more likely to be actively using low code platforms, which begs the question for me is as you abstract away the actual kind of like understanding of how the code's working, is there going to be some like knowledge gap that emerges at some point if it becomes truly like development is all low code development? I don't think it'll ever all be low code development, but it begs that question. Are we abstracting it to the point where knowledge is going to be lost? Someone actually knows how the code is working.
Yeah, great question. I don't know if I've ever thought about it. Maybe, but it might be lost in an area that I don't even want this knowledge. Like, again, I want to focus my knowledge on this innovative new thing that we're trying to come out with, AI, machine learning, or whatever the hottest topic is. Yeah. But again, like the CRUD in between, like let some other low-code yet to get care of that. Yeah, that's cool. And it makes sense that probably some of the more junior engineers you start, like the new blood will take advantage of this because you could probably up-level your career faster, something
yeah,
like
they're
that.
Probably less like carry that ego.
Self. I have the ego. But
the other thing that was interesting too, you know, one of the connotations of low-code, I think, is that people who are not technical can build stuff with it. And my thought on that was that I don't know if engineering teams want people that aren't engineers building stuff, because they're probably not going to follow like a process. Who knows what the quality will be like. But I was actually surprised that like less than 10% of the people that responded said they didn't want business users actually like building their own automations or stuff like that. So they actually want to get rid of that stuff.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm actually just coming off a pod. This pod will come out in the future at some point. But he's the CEO of OutSystems, which is this low code environment. His whole thing was it's a speed thing. Like, how fast can I deliver on my project? If we remove the barrier, let's do the things that you don't want to do faster. Okay, that's better, because everyone's about decreasing their cycle time. Let's move faster. So that's how it made sense to me. Well, but
we did ask about that too.
And yeah.
80% of the people that we asked said that low code delivers strongly on the promise to accelerate the release of an MVP.
Yeah, there you go. Like, how fast could I get the first iteration out? Totally makes sense to me. Everyone wants to move fast. That's cool. Now, I think in June, on another topic, you published a research report on CICD. What's going on there in that report?
Yeah, so in that report, we did a couple things. We took an interesting look at CICD. We wanted to understand the relationship of software delivery and design, whether you're using TDD, BDD, the Ds.
Yeah,
and
sure.
How that impacts
test-driven development, behavior-driven development. Yeah,
and then we also looked at the relationship of software delivery techniques and effects. One of the things that we definitely have seen over the past 3 to 5 years is there's increasing adoption of CI/CD, which you would expect. There's a lot more adoption of CI than CD at this point, and I think that is the result of CD isn't always needed. You don't always need to be continuously delivering software. It's aspirational, I think, for some people. One thing we saw was there's definitely interest in an increase of adoption of repository-based CI/CD. So like GitHub Actions, GitLab, we're starting to see people actually using those services, which is interesting because you're like offloading the CI/CD into a managed service.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we looked at too was like, how seriously do people take test-driven development or test coverage of their code, and how does that correlate with their rollback incidents? And I think some of the findings there weren't surprising. It was just like, yeah, the more test coverage you have, the less likely you are to roll back your code. I think what was more interesting in the CI/CD report was the editorial components. And we had a bunch of different pretty good articles really good articles written by people in the industry. We looking at things like observability and AI ops, CI/CD security. Now, obviously with cloud native architectures and hybrid architectures becoming more, security is a rising concern, and integrating security, pushing it left with all the testing and stuff is becoming more of a concern. So there was a really good article about the kind of modern CI/CD security landscape in the report.
Yeah.
And then we looked at infrastructure as code and like, where can you automate infrastructure? And rather than me trying to tell you the takeaways from those articles, I would encourage people to go download it, read it, because it's a really good report and it gives a pretty good idea of one of the types of things that people can do right now to either begin their CI/CD journey or accelerate.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. So the infrastructure as code stuff, that's been going on for a bit here now. How can I automate my infrastructure, stand up a new instance, all of that totally makes sense. The shifting security left, I've heard that a few times. So how do I integrate security into my CI process, find issues sooner, save time? There's a lot of startup companies, or not even startup anymore, like billion-dollar companies that have done a great job there. One of the things that we're working on at Linear B, and I see as an extension or future of CI/CD, we're working on something called developer workflow optimization. And what it is, basically, every engineer gets a little bot that's their friend, a little buddy that tells them, hey, here's what's going on with your code now. oh, someone's waiting for you to review this pull request, or your code just got released to production, or we detected a possible issue with your code while you're coding, or, hey, let me hook up this code, that this branch to a Jira ticket. I don't see that it's linked for you. Let me do it automatically.
I love the idea. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It seems like in today's world where people are moving to distributed teams, something like that would be super useful to keep them in tune with whatever else is going on.
We've been rolling it out to our customer base. Like, people love it so far. And yeah, as you get more distributed and more remote, people are working in different time zones. There's not these artificial barriers that we all have to be in the office together working the same time. It feels like a very old school concept. Now it's like I can hire any engineer in any part of the world if we have great asynchronous communication. And so, yeah, this developer, we call it DWO, developer workflow optimization, this DWO, the need for it accelerates as we change the way we work. And that's what, at least what we see, is like a next level CI/CD is bring all of this awareness to the developers themselves. Now you're going to really see an acceleration of how quickly you can get code out. So that's one of the future things that I see. Now, I know that you conduct, like, DZone regularly conducts research and development surveys.
Yep.
Are there any other key trends that you're seeing with global shifts and remote work, like that type of thing?
Yeah, DZone, I would say our audience tends to skew enterprise, like people working in enterprises. That's not, it's probably 60-40. But yeah. So a lot of the trends people writing about on DZone are the trends you'd expect. So things like adopting microservices and, yeah, building cloud native architectures and managing remote teams has come up. But I think due to the global nature of our audience, a lot of our audience has already been, has grown up working in that remote first world. Even before COVID, I think there has been, I have been reading a lot more about the importance of DevOps in general and tuned DevOps kind of culture, because you have people working at different times, checking in code at different times, working with different environments. And so there's been a lot of content around that recently.
One of the things that I keep hearing about is microfeedback loops. It's like a sexy name, microfeedback loops. And it's basically like, how quickly after I start developing my code can I get feedback? This speaks to CI/CD. It speaks to developer workflow optimization that I was talking about. Whether I'm in a distributed system or anywhere I work, like I'm working on my code on my laptop here, I think I'm done. How quickly can I get a piece of feedback on it? How quickly can I get it all out to a customer? Because if you can shorten those feedback loops, it's like in your brain now, I just wrote that code. It sucks if it's, oh, 14 days later, I understand it's in production and some behavior about it. Like, I'm already on to the next thing. I need to know in 15 minutes. Like, I'm working on it right now. So I saw that as one topic that seems to be trending, microfeedback loops.
Yeah. And I think that's like a good fundamental evolution of agile principles and just quick iteration and being able to move fast. So I would agree.
Absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, we're very excited to partner with you on our Interact conference on September 30th. So going to be super cool. Really proud to be partnering with you. What's got you excited about Interact and the Dev Interrupted community?
Yeah, the thing that really excites me the most, and I think it's the thing that I enjoy about the stuff you put on DZone as well, is this meta discussion around software development, being able to talk about how to manage teams, like how do effective teams do this or this? And then that I guess that's what I call it, a meta discussion around how to effectively build software, not like the nitty-gritty of how you do this or that, but in the code, but how do you as an organization move forward? So I think having that kind of discussion, that level of dialogue, is super interesting to me, because every team can relate to that kind of discussion. And then also having just the lineup you guys have for Interact will be cool. Just really cool people.
Yeah, the speaker list is pretty incredible. We're going to have the Twitter VP of Engineering, Maria Gutierrez, come on for a live pod. Yeah. A lot of the content that you'll see there is going to be for engineering leaders or people that are aspiring to be engineering leaders. So it's for engineering leaders by engineering leaders. How do I become an elite manager or an elite leader? And there's not too many events out there that are doing that. So That's why I'm super pumped for
it. No, I think there's a lot of coverage how to build software, and there's a lot of coverage about culture, software culture, but not effectively managing teams to build software effectively. There's some, but I agree. It's a cool niche space that I don't think there's definitely not a ton of conferences about it. So it's something unique and should be an interesting set of topics.
Yeah. When you talk about culture, like sometimes there's good articles, but sometimes when you read about culture, it's a little fluffy. How does this help me as a manager? What do I do as a day-to-day? How do I go from being a developer to being a team leader? That's actually one of the articles that I wrote on DZone. I think it's got 60 or 70,000 views, something crazy. That's the type of thing. How do I become a great leader? So yeah, it's going to be amazing.
I think I'll be excited to see how the conversations go at Interact. Dev Interrupted is pretty rich on content on those topics. And
for sure,
hopefully there's a lot of people out there aspiring to be in those leadership roles, because you can't really do anything without people leading the way.
Yeah. So you've built a really large DZone community, and we've also built like a pretty large Dev Interrupted community as well. And obviously Interact is part of Dev Interrupted. I'd love to get your take on how to build a community. What have you learned?
Yeah. So over the past decade of building the community at DZone, I've learned a lot. I can give you some positives, some negatives. One thing I've learned is as you're starting to build a community, it's not a good idea to make decisions without involving the community. So I can think of a number of times where we might have iterated on DZone and changed something. We've had people using DZone and we didn't really consult with them to see like, how's this going to impact your interactions? And the blowback is huge. Piece of advice I give is, if you're building a community, be genuinely interested in it being a community and having like good feedback with that community. The thing that I've recognized that's the most essential about community is like, DZone's really just a hub in the middle of a bunch of people. And our role as the destination of the community is just to connect people. And that's what community means, right? So we really spend a lot of time focused on how do we make connection of person A with person B and help them to have meaningful dialogue. You have to be selfless about about building community, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. I think it's like a similar thing that we've learned from the Dev Interrupted community. It's like, first and foremost, the people of the community are what really drive where it's going in the content. And the second thing is, you'll see all these different interactions that kind of happen behind the scenes. If you're involved with Dev Interrupted, you get like career opportunities, people ping you, or they want you to come on a different podcast or write a blog piece. As soon as the community leaders start getting their ideas out there, it's this like a positive snowball effect. Probably what I've learned the most is, once you get it going as a leader of the community, you take a step back and let the people drive it forward. And if it's good content, naturally good things happen again and again. That's probably my biggest takeaway.
Yeah, I think the more you can make it easy for people to give to the community, the nature of community dynamic is, if you give, you get. It's you give first and then you get some value out of it. And so that's the thing. I think what you're doing here with the podcast, with Dev Interrupted, what we try to do at DZone is give people platforms and give them the tools to give to the community. And then that starts off a feedback loop where they get from the community, they give from the community. And it's just the nature of it.
Yeah. I guess the last thing I would say, if you are an aspiring leader, like I want to lead more in the engineering community, or I want to be a manager, I want to be a technical leader, joining the community is one of the first steps. So you don't even have to contribute at first. Contributing, you'll get to that. But you start listening. You listen to other aspirational stories. You see how people have built teams, technical leadership capabilities. That's a way to jumpstart your career. I've interacted with a bunch of people that have gone from this like individual developer type role to being a real leader in the industry. Like, that's how it starts.
And when you think about those people you've interacted with, do you think that the common thread with all of them is they start somewhere, they put themselves out there, they get in tune with other people thinking in the same domain?
I think the common thread that I see is there is an aspirational desire to be elite at their craft, whatever that is. And then the next stuff happens. So it's okay, I want to be great at what I do. I want to be a great engineer. I want to be a great engineering leader. I want to be, okay, I want to be a VP of engineering or an entrepreneur someday. That's where it starts. And then I see them start interacting with more people, come on a pod, write an article, and it goes from there. But yeah, kind of the baseline is like a desire to be great. That's what I see.
I think that makes sense because at the center of most community is a shared interest and passion in something. So you have to be passionate to probably want to take that step in the first place. Totally makes sense.
So is there anything, I kind of know all about the D-Zone community, but is there anything recently or in general that you are doing to build the community now?
Yeah, so there's a few things. Like on the product side, we're starting to think about a few things like how do we incentivize people and give a reward loop for being a part of the community, whether it's like getting some swag or it's getting some recognition. I think that's a big piece. The other thing is because I think you're part of it, we started a Slack channel, which has been really awesome to see people just interacting casually. And so we try to intersperse the Slack channel with events and meetups. And so I think we're actually going to be rolling out a more structured meetup platform and allow people to self-organize around topics and have meetups and discussions. So that's something we're going to be looking forward to doing, hopefully in the near future.
Yeah, perfect. We do the same thing at Dev Interrupted. We have a Discord server. A few thousand engineers, engineering leaders there. That's where you see those interactions happening. So totally makes sense. And yeah, I am part of the D-Zone Slack crew and it's a great community. Yeah, Kellett, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an awesome conversation. It's great to hear an inside look into D-Zone, what you're working on, but also for our audience, like how do you become a part of it and you can start reading and start writing. And most importantly, we're incredibly excited to partner with you for our Interact conference and much more in the future.
Yeah, Dan, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation. I feel honored to be here, given all the other people that I've seen you having conversations with on here. So thanks again. Definitely looking forward to Interact as well.
Awesome. Before we close up, I always like to give our guests an opportunity for a call to action for our listeners. What do you want our audience to take away from this conversation?
So I'll give two. If you are passionate about learning software development, or you want to learn a new technology, or you just want to explore, you're curious, I encourage you to just come to D-Zone. Check out the content we have. We talked about the trend reports. We've got hundreds of cheat sheets and we have articles from amazing writers like Dan. We have thousands of people. Not all of them are like Dan, obviously, but we have thousands of people writing. And then on the flip side, if you have something to share, come to D-Zone and write an article. Anybody can do it. It's free. You just need a free account and you can post it. Our editorial team will look at it and we'll help you get it in front of your peers and hopefully get a good feedback cycle going. Those are my two calls to action.
Perfect. Yeah. So if you haven't checked out D-Zone, go check it out. Read some of the articles. They're really cool. And then if you're interested in contributing, I'd highly recommend you doing so. Also, a quick reminder for our listeners, if you haven't already rated and reviewed our show on your podcasting app, please do so. Reviews are so crucial. It's a way that Dev Interrupted gets discovered. Also, be sure to join the Dev Interrupted Discord community, which we mentioned in the episode here, and also the D-Zone Slack community as well. That's where we keep this type of conversation going all week long. I also want to say thank you to the more than 1,000 of you who are now subscribers to our weekly Interruption newsletter. We bring you articles from the community, inside information on weekly podcasts, and the first look at our upcoming Interact conference on September 30th. Everything that we talked about today will be available in the links in the description below. And Kellett, thank you one more time for being a great partner to us at Dev Interrupted.
You got it. Thanks again, Dan. That was fun.